Morning, Your Honor. Attorney Paul Blake, appearing on behalf of appellant Mr. Brown via telephone. I'm sorry, I don't think I heard the response from the government. Very good. Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, I am pleased to be able to speak to you about Mr. Brown's situation. I would first like to point to the unassailable fact that Officer Whining had been directed by motel staff to a different location, and there was a suspicion that he was there to follow up on an activity, namely transients, possibly urinating, possibly a white individual. And so as he's proceeding into this parking lot, he happens to encounter my client and another gentleman who happened to be white sitting on a low wall. And there was absolutely nothing going on. The officer stops, and the very first thing out of his mouth is there a drug deal going on? And once you accept that fact, the officer had stated his determination to find something and proceeded to do so. And I disagree with my learned colleague that this was a voluntary or consensual contact because of the sequence of events that proceeded from there. Mr. Brown was singled out simply because he had made an alleged movement.
In your view, when did the seizure begin?
I think the seizure began from the moment he had contacted the two individuals engaged in this initial dialogue.
So just walking, the officer walking up and starting a conversation, that's a seizure?
Well, in this particular case, you have the stated intention of what was in this particular officer's head. He was determined to find something.
Oh, we don't determine a seizure. We don't determine a seizure by what's objectively in the officer's head. We would look at what a reasonable person would think, whether they were free to leave. Isn't that the test?
I would submit that I think when you have objective evidence of the officer's stated intention, and he lets us all know as soon as, hey, there's a drug deal. Is there a drug deal going down here, guys? And from that point on, I think Mr. Brown and the other gentleman, and certainly Mr. Brown, would feel objectively not able to leave. And so he was seized from that point. And then, of course, for the officer's benefit, there was this alleged movement, which I would again argue did not present any threat or indicate anything that was going on was even remotely illegal, and for the officer to take the steps he did.
There was no seizure at that point. I mean, no seizure at that juncture. But at some point, so let's suppose that there was no Terry stop until the officer put his hands in his pocket, or shortly before that. Isn't there still a problem here, i.e. that he went into his pocket and didn't pat him down to see if there was a weapon?
Well, here's where I think I'm seeing it from a certain way. I am an advocate.
Yes, but maybe not doing the best. You're looking at it in a way that is not the best advocacy for your client. You're taking the hard route instead of the easier route.
I understand. I appreciate that very much. But once he has Mr. Brown stand up, he certainly sees from that point on, if it wasn't already demonstrably the officer's intention, he was certainly seized by once he stood Mr. Brown up and then began the pat down and search, and everything flew from that.
Did he do a pat down?
Well, he was certainly already searching. You could argue if he was searching for a weapon for officer safety reasons, as we always frequently hear, But he then goes into the pocket.
He put his hands directly in his pocket, right?
He did. He did.
Did he do that?
Yes, he certainly did do that. He's
a violation of the Fourth Amendment to do that.
I believe certainly by that point, we have a clear violation, and that there was no probable cause, no objective issue with respect to officer safety. He's already stood him up and is already proceeding to go through his pockets.
Counsel, hold on just a minute. Because I want to go back to the question that was asked. Actually, are you saying to the court now that there was a pat down before he put his hands in the pocket?
At one point, the officer does address saying that he references officer safety.
Counsel, my question is rather simple. Are you saying that there was a pat down before he put his hands in the pocket?
No, that's not what happened. But I was trying to.
All right, counsel. That you've answered my question. Thank you for doing it.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
What's your response to the government's reliance on the Hill case as authorizing the officer to go straight into the pocket without the pat down?
I don't find that persuasive simply based on all of the facts that we have. And the government has helpfully provided the footage. And, you're seeing him being stood up. There's an immediate search because of some alleged movement. And there's a complete inventory search almost right there. He's pulling out, you'll see the officer pulling out lighter, cash from a couple of different parts of his clothing. And of course, the matter at issue here, this alleged heroin. So all of that's going on. And I disagree totally that is helpful to the government's case or to helping this court in understanding the sequence of events.
Plan to reserve time.
A minute, Your Honor, if I may.
Go ahead. This is the problem with a phone appearance. We can't tell what you're doing. Every so often there's just a stop, and I don't know whether you're finished or not finished. What are you doing?
I'm so sorry. Yes, I appreciate that. Well, in essence, then I would just in turn my remarks to Judge San Martino's decision with respect to our Rule 29. I believe that there was certainly sufficient facts as demonstrated, and that the court should have granted our motion for Rule 29. And I think that should have been granted at that point in time. And I think I'll stop here, and I will reserve 2 minutes to respond, if I may.
I have a minute and 36 seconds. That's what you will reserve. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court.
Counsel, this is Judge Baldock, and I want you to kind of go into what Judge Collins asked. How does the Hill case help you as much as you claim it does?
The Hill case helps us because we're not disputing that there was no initial pat down here, but Hill says in as many words that Terry is not limited to a pat down. It uses the phrase any limited intrusion reasonably designed to find weapons. And I take some issue with my opponent's characterization of the record. At this point, it's not that this officer stands the defendant up and immediately rummages through his pockets. There's no question. Terry says the purpose of the frisk or the search that it authorizes is not to get evidence of crime. It's to ensure officer safety.
The problem for you, though, is the Cibron case, because Cibron says right on page 65 and faults the officer in that case for doing precisely what the officer did in this case, which is going forward and going straight into the pocket. It says, in this case, with no attempt at an initial limited exploration for arms, Patrolman Martin thrust his hand into Cibron's pocket and took from him envelopes of heroin. The search was not reasonably limited in scope to the accomplishment of the only goal which might conceivably have justified its inception. Has that been overruled?
Oh, not at all, Your Honor, and I am familiar
with the Cibron. Well, then, isn't it controlling?
Well, I would respectfully disagree on the facts, Your Honor. There's no... What Cibron says in at least four different points was that the officer there never once claimed to be in fear for his safety. The only thing
That's in the alternative holding.
Correct.
There are actually two alternative holdings, and I understand, you know, that there's a holding that ends on page 64. But then you go on to the next page, and the court says, even assuming arguendo that there were adequate grounds to search, and then goes on and says there's a scope problem. That's the part of Cibron that is a problem for you, and how do you get around it?
I do. Well, you know, I'll acknowledge it's not an easy thing, but what I'm saying here is it's supposed to be totality of the circumstances, the reasonableness of the situation. The officer in Cibron just goes right into a pocket, pulls out a glassine envelope. That can't possibly have a weapon in it. In this case, the officer sees the defendant with his right index finger probing into his pocket. He doesn't just reach...
First of all, it's pretty hard to pull out a gun with an index finger out of a pocket. But second of all, he doesn't see a bulge or any reason to think there's something in that pocket. And he only needed to put his hands on it, and he didn't.
Well, Terry says you do not have to be absolutely certain a weapon's present. You just need facts that would warrant a reasonably prudent...
In order to do a limited action. I mean,
in order to do a protective...
In Terry as well, not in order to put your hands in somebody's pocket.
Right, but here, you know, even before that, even if there wasn't a technical pat down, you at least had an effort to make it a constructive one. The officer, you know, what Terry's aimed at is a general rummaging. This officer, he just is focused on that right pocket. He specifically asked the defendant, "What's in your pocket?" And the defense says, "Oh, I'm not quite sure," which is somewhat of a suspicious answer. I mean, he gives the defendant a chance to explain what's going on. This court has other precedent that says we give deference to officers on the scene.
Well, we know that this officer arrived. First thing he said was, "Is there a drug deal?" So he was trying to find out whether there was a drug deal, right?
He definitely had that suspicion. You know, I know my opponent says those are the first words out of his mouth. That's not true. That comes at 1:40 in. The first thing he says is, "Hey, howdy, what's going on? We're responding to a call that they saw transients, you know, loitering and urinating." So it wasn't like that this happened all at once. And if anything, you know, the officer's attention is focused more on the other individual there, who was Mr. Bartlett, who had obvious track marks on his arms, who admitted a history of heroin use, who admitted he was on bond, admitted he just got out of jail. He's got an unopened tool right next to him, which this officer says in his 23 years of experience is the kind of common thing that is bartered for drugs. And then, you know, the 7:45, you see this movement.
But even assuming that he had cause to be worried and to be worried about that pocket, that there might be a weapon there, wouldn't a pat down of the pocket have been sufficient to dispel that concern?
I mean, not necessarily. You know, he was specifically asked that at the evidentiary hearing. He said, "I don't know how that would have made," you know, or he had a response that indicated he didn't believe that. If you can see from the video that this defendant, he had his pants were very baggy. I mean, he asks him what's in that pocket. The defendant gives him a very suspicious answer, almost a non sequitur. "I don't know." I mean, Hill says, you know, any reasonably intrusion, and the evil at that rule is after is a general rummaging. And I know my opponent, he characterized that as this: you see the officer, he doesn't go in the left pocket, he doesn't go in the back pocket, he goes exactly where he saw that furtive movement. He doesn't fiddle around with his hand. In one move, he pulls out something. We know it had a net weight of about 86 grams. That's consistent with what a pocket knife or a small switchblade could be.
Well, but if he did the pat down and he was not, you know, wasn't assured that it was one, then he can go in the pocket. And Cibron doesn't say anything to the contrary. But the problem is he didn't go through that step. He just went straight and did the more intrusive search.
You know, again, I know it's not something we see very often, but, I mean, it's interesting. When you look at footnote 13 of Terry talks about a pat-down being extremely intrusive. You touch people's armpits, their groin, you're right there. I mean, this was objectively a very – it was almost instantaneous. It was one fluid moment. The officer says, I'm going to check. He lets him know it's coming after giving an opportunity to explain it. And Hill is – you know, Hill has not been overruled. This circuit does not have a rule that – oh.
He pulled it up because he saw something. He didn't feel it, but he saw something that indicated that was protrusive. Nothing protrusive here, right?
I mean, I don't. Yeah, the bag wasn't making any kind of visible. We're not relying on plain touch or plain feel.
Right.
You know, our position is that.
My understanding is that he did see. That there was something popping out under his shirt.
In this case, or are we talking about another case?
Hill. Get to the shirt up.
Yes, Hill. Hill was the bank robbery, and he did see a bulge in that case, yes.
And that's the case you're relying on.
Yes, well, those were the facts there. But what we're relying on, more importantly, is the law of Hill. Hill is, you know, this officer, I mean, if you talk about good faith reliance, Hill says... it's not limited to a pat down. Those were the facts of Hill. Obviously, if we had facts like that here, it would be a better case for us. But I don't know that that's necessarily, you know.
But how did Hill distinguish Cibron, and which side of the line do you fall on?
Well, Hill distinguished Cibron exactly the way I was trying, as I recall. In fact, I've got it right here. They said pretty much in Cibron there was. No facts leading to reasonable suspicion that defendant was armed.
Right. That's the first holding that ends on page 64. So are we to read Hill as saying that we can throw out the other part of Cibron as dicta? We don't need to pay any attention to that?
No, I don't think so. But, you know, the court in Hill didn't feel that that moved the ball in that case.
Well, other thing they said about it is that it was a pocket search case. And this wasn't a pocket search case in Hill. That was the second thing they said.
Right.
Not on the right side of that distinction.
Not with Hill, but, you know, I cited another case. I believe it's called Hoffman. I mean, pocket search cases are not frequent. All we're saying is that from this...
Presumably because the officers know not to do them.
Well, that could be. But I don't know how many cases have an officer who's got an unfolding situation where a defendant leans back, moves his index finger into his right pocket after having not 4 minutes had gone by while they were waiting the warrant check. Mr. Brown was comfortable enough to have a 1 minute phone call with somebody right in front of the police, and then suddenly while this officer is talking to Mr. Bartlett, i.e. when it looks like his attention is not on the defendant, he makes this furtive movement. And after he's heard the officer call in for a record search, I mean, if, you know, those facts, not even remotely close in Cibron, and I think Cibron has to be read in relation to those facts, where that officer never once on the record, and Cibron points out four separate times that there was no fear for safety. And at the very least, I would still say this case is distinguishable from Cibron because glassine envelope, I had to look that up. I remember those things now. Those are, you know, little opaque business envelopes. There's nothing that's going to be in that. Whereas a bag, I mean,
this court in, after he goes into his pocket.
Well, but
after he went into his pocket.
But that was a reasonably limited intrusion designed to find out what it is, squarely within the language of Terry. That is our position. So.
Okay. I think their time is up. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Blake.
Yes, thank you. Very briefly, Your Honor. I appreciate the court's comments, and I certainly note that I believe Sibrun is very influential in this setting. But in response to my colleague's comments, I don't think there's any doubt about where the officer was going once he had contacted these individuals, whether it was very shortly thereafter. And, of course, there was no pat down, and there was no other articulable reason why Sibrun is either overruled. And on that, I'll submit.
Thank you very much. Thank both of you for your argument. The case is United States versus Brown. It's submitted, and we will take it.
Thank you very much, Robert.